We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What do you think about the Laker team now?
You follow the box scores of the games every day?
Just the Lakers.
You're kidding. That is really a compliment. I was pleased to see you smile at the top of our show, because once the game starts, you have a game face. You don't smile much out there.
I don't think you have to do things for money anymore.
Correct.
What's up, Laker fans? It is game day, and the Lakers find themselves in a familiar position about to play the biggest game of the season. We've done this a few times before, but never with these kind of stakes. Game 6 against the Golden State Warriors at home, second round. The defending champs, Mike, been a couple pods since you've been on, man. How you feeling going into this one? I want to take a step back before we really get into the preview, and if you want more of the tactical stuff, listen to yesterday's pod as well, but I just want to take a moment to kind of soak this in and embrace the moment. This is a beautiful thing, Mike, and if you had told us on media day that we would be in the second round up 3-2 at home against the Golden State Warriors, I think we would have all done backflips. And so I'm so excited to be in this position tonight. I also think it's like a 50-50 game. I think it could go either way. So what say you, Mike? What do you see about tonight's game?
Yeah, I wouldn't say 50-50. I think the Lakers have a much better chance than that in this game. It is a home game. They have yet to lose at home. It's a game where you know that LeBron is going to give whatever he has. And I think that he's been this. You can basically replay what I'm saying now from what I said heading into game 6 against Memphis. Mm-hmm. This is the point that we've been making about basically the whole season about LeBron. And that I think he knows what it takes to get through a regular season. With his body, he knows what it takes to get through a playoff series. And this is now essentially game 7. And therefore, it's more rim attacks from LeBron. It's better attention defensively in the first quarter. It's walling off a lot of what Draymond Green and Andrew Wiggins was getting. That's, by the way, the other reason it's not 50-50. AD, it sounds like, should be playing and should be normal. And Wiggins is going to be limited if he's playing. He's got a real injury with some torn rib cartilage that's super painful. And think about all the stuff that Wiggins has been doing with rebounding, with getting through screens, with setting screens. All of that stuff involves contact. But even if you have an injured rib, and now I'm going to speak about it, even though I've never had one, but I could just imagine like trying to just raise up to shoot.
Yeah.
And just do that, make that motion right now. And what is that? What area of the body, you know, are you feeling that in? It's like directly in your rib. So that's all part of it. But in terms of like the coverages and what the Lakers are going to do, and, you know, how many ball screens do the Warriors do with Steph, and, you know, how all of that stuff, to me, I don't know that there's a major edge that either team's going to get from it. I think that at this point they basically know what they can do, and they're going to make choices as to when to do what. But ultimately, the Lakers can play much harder, much more aggressive than they did in game 5. And they knew that going into game 5. And so did we. And the biggest reason is LeBron. So I think the Lakers should have as much respect as they need and they should have for this Warriors team. And I think they've been treating him with respect, but they have a clear edge to me going into this game.
A home game with a trip to the conference finals on the line with LeBron James and Anthony Davis on your team. You have to feel as good as you possibly can considering the strength of the opponent on the other side and who they have in their stable as experienced and championship level players as well. And I agree with Mike's sentiment that as the home team, and the team who just came off of a loss, it is super hard to win two games in a row in any playoff series. And the further you go in the playoffs, that becomes more true. It's why the most difficult game to win in this series was game four, because the Lakers won one and then they lost one. And then in game three, they won. And then in game four, it's just like, okay, how is this going to break? And it basically took everything the Lakers had in order to win that game. And the Warriors fought like hell to get it because they knew that in this exact circumstance, they were going to have to win on the road in order to win. Now, to the Warriors' credit, I think it goes back to Cro-Magnon and the Dinosaurs, the last time the Warriors went through a playoff series and didn't win a road playoff game. Yeah. So they should feel confident, Pete, in their own abilities in order to go out there and win one road playoff game. They did it in a game seven, just in the last round against a very game opponent in the Sacramento Kings. So I'll kick it back to you here, not on tactics, but just on the idea of experience and knowing and being in the moment, because I think those are the things that sort of, they like trump X's and O's a certain extent, right?
Especially in games like this, right? These are games where guys who are normally productive, normally play well, can start feeling sort of the gravity and pressure of the whole circumstances. And we've got a lot of guys who haven't been in this position before, right? It's particularly in their role. And so that is a place where I do think Golden State has an advantage, right? Like they've got a lot of been there, done that on their team. And so do we, especially up top. But, you know, this is Austin's first time in this sort of position. Even a guy like Dennis, who's been around for a long time, like he's, I think, going to have a really elevated role against the defending champs, right? Like this is some of the highest level basketball he's ever played. Lonnie presumably is going to get good minutes. This is the first kind of end of series against a good team experience that he's going to have. And so what are your thoughts on that, Mike? That whole idea, we got this young crew who I believe in, but that's part of my like 50-50 proposition is that these can be tough games for guys without experience.
Well, what are we just not thinking about the first round series that they weren't?
So the first round series, I don't view Memphis in the same class as Golden State. Like going into game six, I'm glad you brought that up. Going into game six against Memphis, I felt pretty confident about that game. And in large part because I don't think Memphis is particularly serious beyond a certain point. Whereas the mental fortitude that I think it takes to go on the road and win a game six against a crowd that's going to be nuts and a Lakers team led by LeBron and AD, I think that is too much for a team like Memphis. Absolutely not for Golden State. In fact, they're going to be the ones, I think, that have that kind of hunter's mentality as well. So we have to match that.
Yeah, I guess I think I agree with that, like certainly about the difference between Golden State and Memphis. But I also don't think that the Lakers in this context, and especially with LeBron, and like I don't think that the experience that the players went through against Memphis and the pressure of that moment was any less than the pressure of this moment of trying to close them out and not wanting to go back to Memphis, which would have happened had they lost that game. So I agree that the Warriors are going to handle the pressure better than Memphis to an extent, but that's not going to impact the Lakers' energy for this one, I don't think. And that's, to me, the whole key for them.
I'm less concerned about the energy, Mike, as the ability to sustain. So part of the value of that game six against Memphis was we blew them out, right? Like, there was no third quarter, we're down by five, and you got to kind of mentally and emotionally keep it together. Now, this has been a super resilient Lakers team. I don't want to make it sound like they don't have that. I'm just saying they don't have a lot of reps doing it. You know what I mean?
Well, LeBron's got more reps against Golden State specifically than anybody.
For sure.
AD's got plenty of reps in these kind of situations, and they're the two guys that dictate the Lakers' energy. And they're the two guys that whenever they get into the huddle, and if it's whatever, it's Lonnie Walker, I never worry about Austin Reeves in any of these kind of situations. I never worry about Dennis Schroeder in these kind of situations. They don't have the type of personnel that I won't name a specific team, but like there are other teams in the playoffs that have sort of taken the opportunity to take their foot off a little bit. I think when the Lakers have, it's been almost by need, and that's more speaking about energy. And that's why, again, and I'm the mental warfare at this point of the series to me with these two teams has not been the difference. The difference has been the level of physical aggressiveness and the attacking nature. And that's how Golden State has won their two games. It's by Draymond Green coming out, like a bat out of hell with a bet with a attitude, and the Lakers kind of both times seeing it and, you know, matching it some, but ultimately being like in the first, in the second game, we're up 1-0, you know, going to go back home. And then in game five, we're going back up, 3-2. And it's not, this is where it's complicated. Like, it's not that it's not worth matching it. It's that it's going to take, it's difficult to expect that Golden State can have that exact same level that is more than what the Lakers will have. And that's where I go back to the original point about LeBron and the early attack energy. That's where this series is different from Memphis, because I don't think Golden State has the personnel to handle that level of attack. And that's not saying that they can't win this game six, which they absolutely can. I just think that the Lakers should be a clear favorite in it.
I think that's fair. I just want to point out that I'm not talking about energy. I think our energy is going to be great. It's more that, D, can you hold it together in those higher pressure situations, which I do think they can, right? But it is something that the younger players in particular don't have a lot of experience doing.
Yeah, and this is where, like, I'll fly my Swiss flag a little bit, right? Because where the Warriors beat the Lakers in game five was with a certain amount of relentlessness, physically and mentally. And I thought that the Lakers didn't fold mentally. I thought they made, LeBron especially, made sort of a couple of calculated choices around how much am I going to put my foot on the gas right now in order to exert myself for a game that does need, like, let's say on any given game, any given playoff game against the Warriors, you need, out of a scale of 1 to 100, you need to be in the 90s in order to beat them.
Yeah.
Winning game five on the road was probably going to need to be like, oh, we have to redline and maybe actually go faster. Yeah. Like, we need to be more than 100 on a certain level. And there were some calculations there made. And this is where I credit the Warriors. And this is the effort level I think the Warriors are going to give tonight as well, which is going to be super important for the Lakers to, and this is where I waffle back to what you're saying, Pete, that the ability to sustain and not give in at all over the course of the full game is going to be super important, because I don't, and look, I'd love to be wrong about this, I don't envision the Lakers being up by 20 in the fourth quarter and then being able to sort of be like, all right, we dispatched of this team, let's start game planning for Denver, right? Like, I expect this game to be much closer to game one or game four, which was like in the closing minutes, this is up for grabs. And in those moments, any team can make mistakes, right? And so, and this is why I'm just like, look, down the stretch of game four, it was actually the Warriors. It was who turned the ball over on two key possessions. And it was the Lakers who got a couple of key stops and then a defensive rebound at the end where Lonnie got fouled. That was a one-point game. Like, a two-point basket basically puts them ahead and probably wins, right? And so in those instances, it, like, the Lakers have also shown that they have that fortitude that you mentioned, Pete. And so we're all speaking the same language here. And I think we're all on the same page around what is required. Mm-hmm. I think that the level of which our confidence is about how much the Lakers will be there for the full course of the game is going to be interesting. But I do trust the mental focus of LeBron and AD. And I do think that when they are in that moment, the other players sort of have no choice but to fall in line to a certain extent, because they're in those instances, it is LeBron and AD who are propping them up. It's not those guys who have to prop LeBron and AD up, which in other facets of the game, Mike, LeBron and AD do need that propping up, maybe from the physicality or the running or all of the energy like the hustle plays, but from the mental aspect, I think when LeBron is looking at you, or he, or you miss a rotation, or you need to be in this spot instead, he is turning at you almost instantly and barking at you like, we need this right now. And that level of like, oh shit,
is a great point. Yeah.
I have no choice but to be 1,000% locked in right now, because like I'm feeling that pressure, not pressure, but I'm feeling that drive and that pull from LeBron James and Anthony Davis. Like there are no mistakes now. And I think that's the level of focus that those two will bring. And I think it will lift up the other players.
Well, remember going into game six in the first round, coming out of game five, the post game questions that I asked for Darvin Ham and AD were like, well, how much are you going to extend AD's minutes? Because at the time, the second unit was really struggling and they were just getting killed by Memphis and the physicality and all those minutes. And like in this case, we haven't talked about that as much, but AD, of course, goes out early in the fourth. Well, I guess about 7 minute mark of the fourth quarter after getting hit in the head. And he ends up playing 32 minutes. LeBron, they do end up extending LeBron to 39 minutes, but I wouldn't say that his fourth quarter minutes, which were, you know, probably nine of those, mm-hmm. were the most physical that he's ever had to play, right? It was sort of just manage the game and see if you can get a couple threes, and, you know, they never got closer than nine. And to me, this series is so close, and these teams are both so good that the difference between, like, you got Draymond's best effort. You got Wiggins' best effort. You got a very steady, you know, Curry game, even though the Lakers are still spending most of their time paying attention to him. Klay is not going to be able to go off, I think, like he has in past times because of how much screen roll they're running with Curry. That's not an action that particularly gets Klay, like, the types of shots and the amount of shots, the volume of shots that are going to work, because they're not going to just leave him out there. And therefore, he's not the one that's cutting to the basket. He's not the one that's getting the ball in those short rolls. And so I don't think that there's that as much of a possibility for that to happen. So it's why I keep returning to, you know, the energy that LeBron and the activity level that he gives early, that gets the building going, that gets the teammates going. And that's why, like, that's what the Lakers fought for when they got game one. And when they protected home court, even after taking Golden State's best punch in game four. And that's the part that I'm sort of, my experience in being in these types of arenas and what happens in playoff games, as long as they're close enough, that's what I feel like I've seen.
And I think the way that activity and energy and engagement plays out on the court for the Lakers is especially on the defensive end, right? Like, we're at our best when we go on defensive runs. And in game four, Lakers hold the Warriors to 17 points, right? And this has been a theme that when the Lakers really close out a team, it's on that defensive end. And so that, I think you're spot on with that, Mike. And I think that is the best route to winning. I have a concern on the offensive end, though. So let's take a break. When we come back, let's talk about it.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
I feel like in a general sense, guys, our main offensive guys are like B to A minus level offensive players. And that is really good, right? But having watched this team all year, there isn't a we really need a bucket. We're going to do one of these couple of things and it's probably going to work, right? Like the way that Golden State has with Steph Curry. They have a reliable, we need to score. This guy's going to be able to generate us a good shot. It's more like here and there with this team. And Darius, before the pod, you were listing off LeBron and AD's stats in closeout games, right? And so for the preview, you're writing for Lakers.com. So I think that in games like this, that's where that has to come from, is the LeBron and AD having a 30-point night type of thing, right? And being those type of offensive hubs, because what I've seen from this team so much so far has been great, really high-level defense, but offensively, it's a little, I'm not sure where we're going to go.
This is where offense and defense are inextricably linked with any LeBron and Anthony Davis team. And so the Lakers scored really effectively in the last game, right? It's just like, oh, look at this, a shootout. Isn't this great? But it was almost all dependent on jump shooting and then with AD sort of getting some grimy baskets. But it was just like, oh, look, here's LeBron. He's bombing threes. And Austin with another long jumper. And look, even Dennis here getting into the mid-range and knocking down his mid-range shot. When the Lakers go on those 13-3 runs or 14-2 runs, or we've even seen like, oh, that's a 22-2
They've
run.
They've had
or
some
that's
monsters,
a,
yeah.
That's a 30-8 run. And those are almost all like defense-inspired, getting out in the break, scoring in transition. Now we get fouled. And so 2 3-pointers at the foul line. Now you're going up against a set defense. And now you have to score again against this set defense. And oh no, you missed. And now it's early offense again. And it snowballs. And suddenly you've scored on one of your last 6 possessions. And the Lakers aren't fouling. That's how it snowballs. And so to your point around needing there to be a go-to action, it's like the go-to action is, can we get a stop and secure a defensive rebound and then push? Mm. And the Warriors, as the series has gone on, have been better at slowing down the Lakers' transition attack. But that takes a ton of effort too, particularly when you're a team that wants to go to the offensive glass. And so how do they manage that is, I think, the pivot point in the game, because the Lakers are not drawing as many fouls as they're used to drawing in half-court situations, but they are drawing fouls in transition situations, LeBron especially. But even Austin, right, like Dennis, these are where they're drawing their fouls. It's by going to the basket almost unimpeded and then attacking a guy at the rim. They either have to foul you or they're going to force a miss and then someone's going to clean up the offensive glass and now a guy is getting crammed into, right? And so when you talk about a go-to action, Pete, like to me, it's not so much as like the old reliable LeBron and AD pick and roll or LeBron in the post or AD in the post. I think those are all viable actions and they'll go to those, Mike. But I think that if the Lakers are going to feel comfortable, quote unquote, offensively in this game, it's going to be because their defense is pushing them towards better offensive opportunities, both in transition and in early offense.
Yeah. So the way that you describe the half court offense, Pete, I think is totally right for what we've seen so far this series. And the reason is that Draymond Green has been playing great. They've been going to that lineup and he's both bothering Anthony Davis and then he's recovering into the middle of the paint. And if Reeves or D'Lo look up and they get a screen and they see Draymond and they're like, nah, I'm not going to go attack that. And therefore they're getting stagnant. And the solution though, forgive me for repeating myself again, is LeBron James. Like it's not going to happen every possession, but he cannot stop an actual fully charged LeBron foray into the paint.
Do we know what that fully charged looks like though right now, Mike? Like if he was moving like he was, I was watching his game in January and the way he was moving then, I was like, if we had that guy, I'd be feeling really good right now. That's kind of the foundation of my nervousness.
So this is, again, it's such a subtle difference, right? But it's the difference between watching what we've just seen and what you've just watched again on tape. Like it's on the film. This is the Laker Film Room podcast. I get it. You know, I am not trusting that. I am trusting that LeBron is going to at least a little bit of a higher level with those types of drives. And that to me is what breaks Golden State's defense, ultimately. Not like...
I love it.
Not 10 times, but 3 times. You know, how many times did he have to do it against Memphis? And Memphis had Jaren Jackson Jr. in there, But LeBron figured out how to put him in the right spot on the floor so that he could attack. You know, that's ultimately what I think you have to trust, not as a Laker fan or as we've gone over. That's not me. I'm saying I believe until I see it not happen that LeBron will be able to do it enough to get one win at home with his teammates healthy. But the context under which he's going to do it in, we haven't seen a lot of it this series. And and by the way, they might not. He didn't have to do it in game six against Memphis because they kicked the shit out of him defensively. And then it opened up all the stuff that Darius was talking about. All of that. Like, that's all stuff that's going to happen. And that's without even getting the D'Angelo Russell trail three, right? That like really gets the crowd in and kind of demoralizes the opponent. But I'm just and by the way, let me add AD into this. Draymond also can't stop a steady diet of Anthony Davis attacks. He can discourage one or two. He might draw a charge, right? He might block a shot here or there. But when Davis was not taking no for an answer, that was when Draymond got in foul trouble. And I think that's the other way to attack this. So it doesn't have to be Austin Reeves. This is the superstar game. Yes, agreed. It's great if somebody like Lonnie Walker or Reeves or Russell or anybody else on the roster, Vanderbilt wants to hit a corner three in the first quarter, great. You know, but this is more like LeBron, AD, versus Steph and Draymond and Clay. And what do LeBron and AD have that those three guys don't have? Power. You know, this is a power game. Yeah. And that's what they have to go to. And it's not necessarily going to be easy. But I think that's the sort of solution to those half court problems in particular.
Hey, Mike right there just moved me up to 55, D. I'm now at 55-45 Lakers.
Now I'm responsible for if they have.
Yes, yes, for all my hopes and dreams. No pressure.
The interesting thing is, though, and so we haven't talked tactics at all, right? And so the idea of LeBron driving more, that's great. It's just like, what's the configuration in which that happened? One of the things that I'm super interested in seeing is Darvin had media availability yesterday, and he got asked, and this might have even been post game, but the idea of like, hey, what are you going to do about your lineups? Like, is it time to like potentially change the lineups, right? And Darvin was sort of like, you know, we'll look at everything, but it may be that you play the people that you've been playing and you do the things that you've been doing, but you just do it better than what you did it the last game. And there's some truth in that. The other truth is, though, is that the two players with the lowest plus minus for the Lakers in this series are LeBron James and Jared Vanderbilt. Now, if it was just LeBron James, like it was in Memphis for a little while, that would tell me that the second unit that LeBron champions or captains, basically, when Vanderbilt is out of the game, is struggling, because that's what was happening in Memphis. AD's plus minus was through the roof, and LeBron's was like was in the negative or right at neutral. And that tells you where the game has been won and lost, basically. The fact that both LeBron and Vanderbilt are low on that list, Vando's only playing with LeBron. Vando's playing like 18 minutes a game, and like, I don't know, man, what, 12 of those, 13 of those are with the starting group?
He's playing 11.
Yeah, like, and all of those is one shift with the starters.
Yep. And those were bad, right? Like, and so that speaks to your point, right? Like, that's the group.
Yeah, that's where the minus is coming. And so it's going to be difficult to uncork those drives that Mike is talking about, which I think are going to be crucial. Like, double paint attacks from the Lakers' two best paint-hunting players, that's the way that you threaten a team that's small. They're playing Draymond Green at center and Andrew Wiggins at power forward, and the Lakers aren't scoring at the basket because they're basically collapsing in the paint off of Jared Vanderbilt. It's the same idea that Memphis was using when Vanderbilt was in the game, but they're just doing it with like another small player who can then rotate back out to the perimeter, right? And so,
well, just Darius, quickly, the question is, how much of that is because they're settling, and how much of that is because Golden State's really good at this, and that's what they usually do, and they make teams into it. But like, the first possession of game five, and I the first possession, this is the whole thing for me. LeBron has a jumper that Golden State concedes, doesn't take it, swings it to AD, has a jumper, doesn't take it. AD repositions himself in the paint. LeBron gets him the ball. AD turns and draws a foul on Green. Like, it's not that complicated sometimes. They're just, they're not, they haven't been doing it. And I'm not just arguing all of a sudden they're going to do it every possession of game six and it's all going to be fixed and they've figured it out. It's just that they, like, they know deep down that they can attack that way if LeBron and AD refuse to settle. And I just think that it's been like they got up 3-1 in some ways by just saying solid, you know, but now Golden State's coming at a different level. And I think that's what it requires them to not settle like that.
And for me, I think it's a geometry problem, what you posed, D, that if Vando's on the court, I don't think those drives are open. If there's any just lasting to me basketball lesson from the Russ era is that having another player who has a legit weakness as a jump shooter next to LeBron and AD makes things significantly harder on offense. And part of the big turnaround the Lakers have had has been they've had like literally the opposite type of players in many circumstances around them. And all of a sudden it looks wonderful. So I think this matters a lot personally.
In all the situations I'm talking about, Vanderbilt is not on the court. Like, I don't think LeBron and AD are going to have all these rim attacks like with him on the court. I agree. So I don't think he's going to play that much.
Right, even so, if he starts. I think that was your point, right, D? That
yes, it's more just like, yeah. Okay, well, how are you then going to establish this offensive attack? And here's the other thing, too. It's just like the tricky thing for Vanderbilt is, and I think that in this last segment, I'd love to sort of get to some of the defensive tactics because the Warriors have really found ways to keep Anthony Davis out of the paint. And for all the talk that I made about like, hey, the way that you get this team going on offense is by getting stops and going in transition. Well, if the Warriors are scoring at the clip that they've been scoring at and generating and getting the shot quality that they've been getting over the last couple of games, they're going to continue to score, right? And so some of this is dependent on who do you guard? And with the way that the Lakers have rearranged their defensive assignments, Vanderbilt has now become the guy whose on-ball defensive pressure is less applicable because he's not guarding like an offensive threat. He's been stuck on like Gary Payton, right?
And so because, he's not really providing the defensive value that he normally would.
Yeah, it's just like, so that's another reason why his minutes have slipped. It's not just because he's not scoring or hitting the shots. It's because his defensive utility has gone down based off of what his assignment is. And so for me personally, and I'll explore some of this in my preview at Lakers.com, but if Vanderbilt is going to play, I'd love to see him get deployed on someone where his defensive pressure might actually be meaningful and have a bigger impact than what it's had. Maybe that's on Clay. It's just like, look, you're going to play 11 minutes a game and it's going to be against the star starting group. Go chase Clay Thompson so that that's AD helpful. Maybe doesn't have to show as much on those actions, the off-ball screens, and he can camp closer to the paint if he's going to guard these guys. Try to shut off the water somewhere else. Like, because Vando as a helper, the Warriors don't feel him as a helper. They feel him as a ball pressure player. That's or right. A guy who is fighting over screens and contesting shots. And when was the last time you saw Vando contest a shot in the half court? The last defensive play that he made was that great block against Draymond, but that was in transition. It's just like, his impact defensively has gone down basically every game. Remember the first game? It seems like a decade ago when he was ball denying Steph.
Yeah, it was like, guarding Steph. Yeah, we were going nuts about it. Yeah.
And so that's gone away, and it's gone away through tactics that the Warriors have deployed in order to try to impact Anthony Davis. And so I'm super interested in, like, we've talked about, well, there's not really a lot of tactics left. It's just like, that's true, but it's not 100% true. There's always some tactics left to explore. The question is do you actually want to try them because you're so late in the series? Because if you try them and they don't actually work, you're kind of screwed. Because you've sort of put all your eggs in the single basket. So I'm just super interested in this push and pull between this. And Vanderbilt is an interesting pivot point because he can help defensively, Mike, but he is a hindrance offensively. And that's something that they have to juggle.
Yeah, I think the way it plays out in game six is that you see Darvin sticks with the starting lineup that he's been using and just hopes that kind of the early activity and the energy and the all that kind of stuff just helps the Lakers, and the Vanderbilt gets an offensive rebound or maybe he hits a shot or whatever it might be. But if it's not working, then, you know, Schroeder is sort of ready to come in pretty quickly. And then, so this is where I want to take Vanderbilt out of the discussion some. Assuming that that's not an issue, right? And whether it's Schroeder in there or even it's some, it could be Lonnie, it could be Hachimura, you know, what are the key points defensively then about for the Lakers? What is the optimal way, Pete, this series that they have guarded Steph Curry? And how much of it is switching that they did in the second half, which you've been calling for? How much of it is AD staying in the paint no matter what and then doubling off or helping off somewhere else? What is the, and it could be all of the above, right? That's usually my answer in these kind of things. You're not just going to throw one thing at Steph and be like, hey, we'll do this coverage all game. But what are the ways that you've seen that, and how do you think it's most important in a game six like this, with the knowledge that, you know, in game seven at Sacramento, the last time Golden State had the must win, he basically just decided to go in full on solo attack mode the whole game.
And I think a big part of that was they made Sacramento go so small that it was like, oh, you don't have, it's Trey Lyles at the five. I'm going to the bucket.
Nobody,
you
know, on the court that could impact him much.
Exactly. And so that's part of the fun of this, is that the answer to that question, that is how much of it is this or that or this, is really a possession to possession type of thing. And that's the chess match that not only the coaches, but even more so the players on the court from possession to possession are navigating. And Golden State, I would argue, is the best ever at that. They understand the sequence. They understand the, if the defense does this, then I do that. Their whole offense is based off of read and react processing. Like, so their ability to be like, okay, that exact scenario, you're doing this, so I'm going to do that. And then having the skills to be able to cash out on the advantage that you create from reading the defense properly. It comes down to this for me, though, defensively. If you're going to start Draymond Green and Gary Payton II, it's a similar principle of what we were just talking about with Vando, in that, like, make them beat you with jump shots. Now, Draymond hit his jumpers last game. Draymond is scary to me in a game like this because he's an all-time great, that guys like that have games like that and games like this. Klay Thompson, same type of thing, right? Although I think your point about the on-ball screens greatly reducing his volume, I think is spot on, Mike. So all of that, right, like I think matters a lot, but make them beat you with jump shots, D, right? You got Gary Payton II and Draymond in that group. I think that is the place that you can cheat off of with AD if you do it right. Now, how to do that? Are you helping one pass away? I think that's probably the next card to play in the sequence, is like one pass over the defender, you know, stunts a little bit more, and then you give up a wing three to Moses Moody, who's been shooting well, right? Or Gary Payton II, Draymond Green, right? There's no version of this where it's like, we're going to do this and they're not going to score, right? But I do think that we have a couple cards left to play.
We do. We've talked a lot about LeBron and LeBron's like offensive gear and the gear that he can reach offensively in order to like access this level of him as a rim seeking player. And I think that we will see more point LeBron. I think we will see more attacking switches and trying to like hunt some of their lesser defensive players. Anthony Davis is the best defensive player in the world, and he can access a level as well that we haven't necessarily talked about, where there's fluctuations within Anthony Davis's defensive game as well. Now, his baseline is super high. I'd argue that his baseline is as high as any other players in the league when they're basically playing their baseline level of defense as well. There's very few players that can access the level that Anthony Davis can access defensively, right? For all the talk about like, oh, did you see what Jokic did? He had a 100-point triple-double with 45 rebounds. It's like, oh my God, this dude's unbelievable. Did you see Steph? He scored 60 points and made 15 threes. It's just like, oh my God. Did you see Anthony Davis? He shut down the entire world defensively and basically caused a blackout in the arena. Mm. That's the level that he can get to when he is fully playing with a bunch of motor. And this is why LeBron James, as the I've got one more game in me, as this elite control the game offensively, that allows Anthony Davis to recede offensively and then explode defensively and shift gears. And I am looking for, if the Lakers are going to win this game and they're going to be
and they're going to win it with confidence, it's going to be because LeBron James is controlling the game offensively and Anthony Davis is controlling the game defensively to the levels in which you can control it against an opponent that is this good and this smart and this talented and has this much pedigree and pride, right? And so no one's talking about a blowout here, but I'm talking about, oh, this thing got shut off because Anthony Davis did this, not on 20 possessions, like Mike was saying, but on five possessions, maybe the five most critical possessions in which it needs to happen. And that's sort of what I'm looking for, too, in terms of if you're trying to navigate this from a Lakers perspective.
A quick thing on Anthony Davis. He had no blocks in the last two games, and I don't expect that to continue. There are some reasons for it, where Golden State has him playing defense and trying to get out to the three-point line and then recovering. And they've done some clever things there, but I think that changes. He did have three steals in game four, but none in game five. And so that's one thing, just his activity defensively, uncorked, all that. But the thing that I would focus on that I haven't mentioned much, you can't shut Steph Curry down. He's too good. He might miss some shots. You can make his shot, you can make him difficult, but that's what true offensive superstardom is. And so that's fine. You know, you're going to have to live with a certain amount of it. You cannot let, though, if you're the Lakers, you cannot let Draymond Green alpha you like he did last game and like he did in game two. That is something that AD specifically and LeBron, to an extent, they can shut that down. They can match that. They can take him out. They can make him take jump shots. They can take away his layups to an extent. They cannot let him bark and own the referees. And own, like, that is the alpha that has to get met at home in game six. Steph can't mess with Steph. He's going to do whatever. He's going to do his thing. But I would not allow Draymond, if I were AD and LeBron, as friendly as they are. And that's not that they're letting him because they're friends. I'm saying, like, the nasty that I expect them to bring has to meet Draymond, because that is the way that Golden State can come in and win. If he struts around and he's the one that is leading from the alpha perspective, that can't be him.
LeBron and AD and Draymond all woofing at each other sounds like tremendous entertainment. What a game. Chance to go to the Western Conference Finals to meet Denver, who looked phenomenal in their series. Congratulations to them. I cannot wait for tonight's game. We'll be back either tonight or tomorrow to discuss how it went. But until then, you've been listening to the Laker Film Room Podcast. We'll catch you guys next time.
Baines has got it in low to McHale. McHale wants to turn. He's double teamed. Just pass out of front. Broken up by Worthy. Tip to Magic. Worthy dies on his belly. Magic scores.
There's Magic, got it. Magic fires. It's good. The Lakers win the game. The Lakers win the game.
Rebound of Lottie. 3 seconds left. Van Exel to win it. It's on the way. Good!
Kobe Bryant, 48 points, 16 rebounds. Shaq with his eighth block shot that ties an NBA Finals record.
A lot of Laker fans sticking around for this.
You're seeing something that's very rare indeed. A Laker to get MVP chance
in Boston. Of all places.
Are you kidding me?
Kobe. Hard to believe.
Are you kidding me? Unreal! Are you kidding me?
Lakers looking to push. Bryant spinning in the lane. Back for Gasol. Pretty pass. And it's back to a three-point game.
Kobe Bryant picked up by Bell.
There's the move. Two. One.
Miss it!
Bryant! Unbelievable.
It's over.
Shot clock now to five. Bryant. Yeah!
With a little tap to Alvin Gentry.
Add insult to injury, Kobe. I mean, what a shot. I mean, you can't defend that. Are you kidding me?
2.1 seconds remaining. Denver a foul to give. Jokic trying to disrupt Rondo. He puts it in. Here's Davis, 4-3 in the win. Oh, it's good! Anthony Davis has won it for the Lakers! James again. Oh, he hits another one. LeBron James putting together a closing quarter against the Nuggets.
This historic 2020 NBA championship belongs to the Los Angeles Lakers. The Lakers conquer the bubble, and banner number 17 will soon hang in the rafters.